Blog Talk Radio.
November 17th, 2011. This is the Hermetic Hour. I am your host, Polk Runyon. We're back from the vortex of Sedona and the temple overlooking the Grand Canyon. We're back on the air. Now, tonight we'll present a discussion on the relationship of the Hermetic tradition with Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Now, this topic was suggested by one of our listeners who wanted to know, where does Jesus fit into the Hermetic scheme of things? Now, this is a very good question. The Hermetic tradition interpenetrates, incorporates, may have influenced, and certainly enhances the mystic and philosophical aspects of all three of the great biblical religions, and especially the tradition of Freemasonry. The Hebrew Kabbalah is especially compatible with Hermetic concepts and Gnostic cosmology. Alexandria in classical times, 100 years before the Common Era began, saw the birth of the Hermetic tradition and may even have influenced Jesus himself, more so than Buddhism, which was not familiar to the Greco-Roman world. The similarities between Christian and Hermetic philosophy led to the popularity of the Hermetic writings in the early Renaissance and their brief acceptance by the Roman Church. Christian Jews and Sufi Muslims, who are not prisoners of their dogma, should find no problems working Hermetic systems such as the Golden Dawn. And, of course, if you can get along with Freemasonry, you can enjoy the Way of Hermes. Now, we will discuss early forms of Christianity that fit well into the Hermetic doctrine, and we will discuss Jesus' teachings in relation to Hermetic philosophy. So, as we said in the abstract, tune in and we'll witness for Hermes. And to quote the Reverend Bobby John Rich, we'll all be saved. Oh, hallelujah. Now, I don't mean any disrespect by that. So, let's get right on into this. This is a complex subject. We're going to try to make it as understandable and as enjoyable as possible. Now, the first thing I want to get across is just exactly what is Hermetic philosophy, so that we know what our groundwork is on this thing. All right, Hermetic philosophy does owe something to ancient Egypt, but not as much as was thought, you know, in Europe during the Renaissance or whatever. They thought it was from very ancient Egyptian writing. Well, it does owe something to that, but it was created in about 100 years before Jesus came or was born, in Alexandria, in Ptolemy's Alexandria, which was the center of culture and learning, and they had the university and the library there and everything. And this is where everybody came from all over the Western world to study. was in Alexandria. And there was this was an era in which there was a great deal of revelatory religious experimentation and development or whatever. And the school of Gnosticism developed even before Hermetic philosophy had developed. And, of course, it influenced Hermetic philosophy, and it influenced the Kabbalah, and it influenced, it probably influenced Mithraism, too. So the Gnosticism is where we get started on this. Now, what is Gnosticism? Well, the best way to explain Gnosticism is to see what it grew out of. Gnosticism was actually a result of urban sprawl, smog, pollution, people being separated from their families and living in slums. Now, all that sounds very modern, doesn't it? Okay. Yes, but the first century, or that about 100 years before the Common Era, before Jesus was born, that's where we first get into modern urbanization. Yeah. Oh, all right. Yeah, this was modern urbanization. Urban sprawl, and what the sociologists and the anthropologists like to call anomie. Oh, I have come home again from the farm, and I don't know anybody, and I'm here in a big city, and everything's awful, and I can't relate to the land anymore. It's just all of the modern problems we have, you know, life in the big city and all that, and the depression and what have you. So that's the milieu where Gnosticism gets started. And it had a negative view. Paganism, it basically had a pretty positive view. Well, over in Tigris and Euphrates and Mesopotamia, they got kind of dark. But basically, paganism, before Gnosticism, paganism had a kind of a positive view of nature. You know, nature was good. Nature was, the world was a nice place. And you related to it, and you related to the farm and the animals and the crops, and you were one with the seasons and all of this, and you had a place. You felt like you belonged. You had a family, a big family. Now, so here we get into this urban situation, and the negative view sets in. The world is an awful place, and everything is lousy, you know, boy. Oh, if only I could get free of all of this and ascend into some sort of cloudy paradise or whatever. So that's where this gets started. Now, you understand now, they had a negative view of the world. Now, in order to understand Christianity and Hermeticism, and because they're both very similar, in order to understand this, you got to understand Gnosticism, because without realizing, you have no idea of how what this is all based on. Now, Gnosticism is ferociously dualistic. Hermeticism is dualistic, but it's in a positive kind of an integrated sort of way. But Gnosticism, oh boy, it's ferociously dualistic. The world is an awful place. The world is ruled by an evil god, who, by the way, they equated with Jehovah, too. You know, that's, you know, right? As I said, they had this negative attitude. World's terrible. You got to get loose from the world. Now, the way they conceived this was that way off beyond the stars was this beautiful paradise of the Father, the original Father, like, you know, kind of like Jehovah. So they thought Jehovah was just the god of this world, and he was kind of bad. But way off beyond the stars is the real Father. And he sends out these sparks, these souls. Now, the demiurge, which could be in some instances Jehovah, sucks these souls, these sparks, up into this prison planet, which is the Earth, and imprisons them. This begins to sound a little like Ron Hubbard and his rocket ships that look like DC-10s that dropped all the souls in the volcano. It does sound a little bit like that. Anyway, maybe that's where Herbert got the idea. I don't know, but we hurl all these souls, these little sparks, these little divine sparks from the Father are all trapped here on the Earth. And so the Father sends the Son, or the Paraclete, or the Christos, because a lot of Gnosticism was interpenetrated with Christianity, and there's a lot of Gnosticism. Well, you'll find out just how much Gnosticism there is in Christianity. Okay, so the Paraclete, the Christ, whatever, he arrives, the messenger, and he says, hey, you guys, you got to come back to Dad, and the only way you can do this is get loose from this planet, get loose from the demiurge. And, of course, in some cases, that meant breaking every one of the Ten Commandments, if you thought Jehovah was the demiurge. And we get loose and go back to the Father when you die. And we have a bunch of formulas for you that you can do that. So you can go through all the gates and go through up all the planetary spheres and go on your way back. And then you can, you know, become one with the Father, and you get loose. Otherwise, you keep reincarnating here on this awful place. And remember now, this is a slum. This is a thing that from poor people in the slums. This is how they want to get away from life. There's nothing good about the world. They want to get away from it. Okay. Now, the key on this that you need to look at is that the Christians will tell you, oh, we have this mystery, we have this Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And you can't understand it, you just have to accept it on faith. Well, what the heck? Well, certainly you can understand it, it's basic Gnosticism. Yeah. Christianity is the Gnostic sect that won out. You see, the Gnostics had three levels. And I know this, we're going to get to Hermetic philosophy in a minute, but you got to understand Gnosticism first. The Gnostics had three levels. First, they had the Hylix. Those were just the people who went to church or went to the Gnostic temple and you know, sung the hymns and whatever, and put money in the plate. Then they had the psychics, and these were the ones who were really, really into learning the rituals and studying and all. And then they had the third degree called the pneumatics, and these were the ones who knew. These were the ones who had the secret. These were the ones who had the Gnosis. Now, the Gnosis, they knew, of course, that they had the soul within them, and they knew that they could go back, climb, and they knew the secret formulas to go back up to the center of the universe and to become one with God, so they wouldn't have to reincarnate on this awful place. They were the pneumatics. Now, when Christianity, which was a form of Gnosticism to begin with, and there were a number of actual Christian Gnostics, this gets complicated. So we'll kind of just say that Christianity was the Gnostic sect that won out, actually. And the thing that about this that you need to realize is that the Christians decided to cut out the third degree altogether. And they substituted faith. And the reason why they did that was that Gnosticism was kind of intellectual. It was a little too intellectual, and it left too much room for interpretation, and it was much better to have just faith. And that has to do with some decisions that I think maybe Jesus probably made to simplify the whole thing. And because the complexity of Gnostic cosmology led to too many splinter sects and too many people, you know, getting their own ideas about how to do things. So it needed to be simplified. Now, this is where Hermetic philosophy gets started. It gets started in this Gnostic stew. Now, Gnosticism came before Hermeticism. Gnosticism, in its earliest form, is about 400 B.C. I mean, it when it first got started. And by the time Hermetic philosophy came along, Gnosticism was, you know, was a going thing in several different sects and whatever. Now, What is Hermeticism? Well, Hermeticism is kind of like Gnosticism and uses some Gnostic, the Gnostic cosmology, the ascent through the spheres and all this kind of stuff. But Hermeticism, its basic philosophy is what we would call Neoplatonism. In other words, yeah, there's a duality in it, but the world is not a bad place, according to Hermetic philosophy. The world is just the mirror of nature. Man, human beings are spiritual. They have the spirit from the cosmos, and they have the spirit within them, and they are divinely ensouled, and yet nature is not bad. Nature is the mirror of their spirituality, and they work with it. And God permeates everything. There's no such thing as an evil demiurge. And well, in some versions of Hermetics, they had that. But basically, God himself is not isolated off across the abyss. God, in Hermetic philosophy, permeates everything. And God is symbolized by the light. The light with a capital L. Now, that should sound familiar to you Freemasons. And we always talk about light, 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 light. Whoa, light, more light. Yeah. Now, this light, of course, shines in all of us and in through everything. Now, this is different than the fiercely or ferociously dualistic Gnosticism, where you have the negative earth. Now, so Hermetic philosophy is much more positive. It is it has all the aspects, the useful aspects of Gnosticism, including astrology, by the way. And Hermetic philosophy is very, very much in tune with astrology. And, of course, the ascension through the spheres, the influence of the planets. All of this works out, but it has a Platonic base. Now, this is very important because so does higher Christian philosophy. St. Augustine was a Platonist. A Neoplatonist, in fact. There's a much more important link between Hermetic philosophy and Christianity, and especially Jesus. Now, I kind of suspect, because we know that Hermetic philosophy got started around about 100 years before Jesus was born, and Jesus, quite probably, he was an educated man, and he probably, he did. He spent some time in Egypt, probably in Alexandria. I think that's they talk about Jesus going over to India and all that, but the chances are those 12 lost years, he was right there in the library studying with Theon and doing like the rest of people like him were doing in those days. That's where he went to college, probably. And the Hermetic philosophy is so close to the inner teachings and the teachings of Jesus, even the ones in the Gospel. You don't have to go into the Gospel of Thomas, although that's good. But I mean, you can find analogs to the Hermetic teaching in regular Synoptic Gospels. Now, what I mean by that is this: the big revelation and the big secret in Hermetic philosophy, the big one. The big secret of what we call enlightenment is that everyone is ensouled. We are all the special representatives of God on earth. We all have these very special divine souls. Now, if you realize this, then you know that God is within you. Now, if you know that God's within you, and you have your own consciousness, I don't have anybody else's consciousness, and you know that you're conscious, and you're the eyes and ears of God, and the eyes and ears, the mouth, the nose, and everything else, then you know that you are basically at the center of the universe, because God is everywhere, and wherever God is, that's the center of the universe. And if you got his consciousness, then you are at the center of the universe. This is where the as above, so below doctrine of Hermetic philosophy comes from. And this is why the Hermetic philosopher believes that he can go anywhere, and he can send his soul anywhere in the universe. That's what we call astral projection. That he can literally accomplish anything because he's God. Now, Hermes is very quick to tell us, yep, you're God, but so is everybody else. Now, a lot of them don't know it, and only those who really realize it. And this is Hermetic philosophy is kind of elite in that respect. If you know it, then you can use this power. The people who don't know it, they have it, but they don't know it. Well, they have what as Hermes says, they have the speech, but they do not have the mind. Now, this is essentially the same thing that Jesus tried to teach. In parables, he tried to teach it indirectly because Jesus was not an elitist. Yeah, Joshua Pantera was not an elitist at all. He tried to give this treasure to the common people. And the only way he could do it was to do it in parables and somehow get their subconscious to realize it without actually trying to get them to intellectually understand it. And the message is so powerful and that he was successful. Of course, he got nailed up and all of that, but still, his message was successful because it became the largest religion in the world, even though it's been, I think, grossly misinterpreted. But still, it was the fact that he had that secret and he was able to put it across in a way that the common man could grasp it. And in order to do that, he came up with the idea of faith, and in order to do that, he allowed them to deify him. Even before Paul and Constantine got around to doing that, he allowed them to deify him. He adopted a supernatural premise in order to get them, but if you study Jesus' teachings, you know that this is a metaphor. It's a metaphor. Because Jesus had the big secret. He had it, I think. Muhammad had it too, and so did Buddha, but I think Jesus, frankly, personally, I think Jesus' interpretation of it, even though it is veiled in parables and everything else, is probably, I think, is superior to either Muhammad's conception or Buddha's conception. And Moses, along with this, early Jewish theology is not transcendental at all. In fact, Moses, whereas Jesus, Hermes, and Jesus are very much influenced by the Osiris mythos. Moses, who Manetho says was a priest of Osiris, but that's Manetho anyway, that's what the Egyptians said. But Moses rejected the afterlife. He didn't have anything to do with that. But at the same time, Moses revealed the secret, if he knew it, revealed the secret in the idea that God says, I am that I am. And if you really look into the I am, and you remember now how many cults there have been that have used I am. You can't go up to Mount Shasta without running into I am. But anyway, I am is the big secret, because when I am means you are, and we is. Okay, so Moses may have had it. Anyway, the Kabbalah certainly thinks he did, and the Kabbalah, which gets started around 300 A.D., actually, the Kabbalah puts this Hermetic Gnostic proposition back into Judaism. And then, in turn, that gets adopted, because the Judeo-Christian tradition, that gets adopted into the Hermetic tradition in the Middle Ages in Europe. And it gets integrated right into it, because it fits so well. Now, where does Jesus fit in the Hermetic tradition directly? Okay. For that, we have to look at a development called the Rosicrucians. It came around about 1614, 1615. The Rosicrucians were a mysterious group that probably got exterminated during the 30 Years' War, but then they had a rebirth in Masonry in the 18th century. And the Rosicrucians were Christian mystics who were very, very hermetic. And so there is a marriage of Christian symbolism and hermeticism there, which has come down to us as the Golden Dawn. And, of course, there are other Rosicrucian groups that are even more emphasize the Christianity aspect even more than the Golden Dawn does. The Golden Dawn, some people feel the Golden Dawn is more hermetic than Christian, and they're probably right. So there is a problem, of course, with Christianity and hermetism, or hermeticism. If the problem, of course, is that once you really, really include Jesus in your rituals and all of this, then you unfortunately get into this business where you have a certain number of Christians in your group who are going to want to be exclusively Christian. You can't use anything else. You know, that's the way they are. And the danger is, of course, that they're going to take over your group, and pretty soon you won't have any more hermetic. You won't be hermetic anymore. That's a danger. But still, a certain degree of Christian symbolism, it works with hermetic philosophy and fine. Now, where do you put Jesus? Put him in Tiberath. That's obviously, that's the Kabbalistic sphere of the sun and the sphere of rebirth and resurrection and all that. That's where Jesus goes. And the essential reason why Christianity and hermetic philosophy, why they work together and why they are compatible, is because they are both positive. They are both religions of the light, with a capital L. They're both religions of the light, and they both share the same big secret. Now, whether Hermes Trismegistus, whoever Hermes Trismegistus was, is probably a committee, but whether Hermes taught Jesus, or whether Jesus taught the Hermetics, either one, we don't know. But they are very, very similar, and they have the big secret, both Christianity. If you can get, read Meister Eckhart, if you want to see some really, really Christian mysticism that expresses the great secret, expresses it very, very well. Meister Eckhart is very, very well worth reading. Now, let's talk about the Kabbalah a little bit in this respect. The Kabbalah is originally, of course, was a commentary on the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and it uses a structure, this Akkadian, Assyrian Akkadian tree of life, which was the ten spheres, which you're mostly familiar with, and with some Samaritan input, and definitely it got Gnosticized. And as Gershom Scholem has pointed out, it also got Pythagoreanized. And, of course, Pythagoras also has quite an influence on the Hermetic tradition. So, here again, remember now, the Hermetic tradition is Greco-Egyptian, Greco-Roman also. It's at that time, the time the Hermetic tradition was put together, most people in Egypt couldn't read hieroglyphics anymore. Oh, they knew about Isis and Osiris, yeah, but they didn't know. So it's more, Hermetic philosophy is more Greek. It's more Greek than it is Egyptian. But there's a lot of ancient Egyptian mysticism that creeps into it. So, this is how it, how it comes together. Now, you might wonder about alchemy and the Emerald Tablet. Well, the Emerald Tablet, as above, so below, and all the mysterious Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus of Smaragdina, was a separate Hermetic tract that came down through the Arabs. Now I want to talk about Islam a little bit in relation to this. After the first burst of Islamic breakout or spread out and conquered half the world and whatever, then they began from being an almost barbaric tribe or coalition of tribes. They decided to civilize themselves as quickly as possible and go as far as they could with it, and they did. And in Baghdad and Cordoba in Spain and Baghdad over there, these caliphates were the epitome of learning, and they were the preservers of Greek philosophy. And they were the preservers of Hermetic philosophy in what we call the Dark Ages. And now the Arabs, though, had a hard way to go with this, because their religion, Islam, as nice as it is and all of that, was very strict when it came to what you could. Astrology was frowned upon, and of course, the jinn were considered to be all evil, and it was rather fundamental. And so, there needed to be a way in which the Arabs could access and use all this knowledge. Well, that happened in two ways. One, the development of the Sufi tradition, which was Arab, which was mysticism, Islamic mysticism. And the other way, and this is where Hermes gets back into it, there was, right up in the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates River, right about where the Turkish border is now, there is a city, or was a city, called Haran. You'll find this mentioned in the Bible. Abraham made souls in Haran, whatever. Now, Haran, the Haranians, who were pagans, of course, they preserved the astrological and planetary magic and religion of the Babylonians. And they preserved it. They called Haran the city of the moon god. Sin, of course, and which we all do occasionally. And so this was the city of the moon god. Now, the Haranians were, as I say, they were the star magicians. They venerated the planets, and they were very much into astrology and whatever. And all the way up, this went on for thousands of years, because you can see in the Bible, Abraham passed through Haran and made souls in Haran, too, by the way. And I don't think that refers to shoe leather. I think it probably is something like the golem. But around about 800 A.D., when the Muslims or Islamic conquerors are going out And you know, in the Quran, it says that Jews, Christians, Sabaeans, people of the book, are exempt from forced conversion, and everybody else, all the pagans and all the animists and all the, you know, the whatevers, have to convert to Islam, or they get killed, or they get enslaved, or whatever. So this Muslim emir with his army arrived at the gates of Haran in about 800 A.D., and he said to the Haranians, they came out, and they had big, real tall hats. The Haranians had these great big stovepipe hats they wore, and they came out, and they all stood there with their hands in their robes, and the emir with his army, and he said, "You people have a choice. You can become Jews, you can become Christians, you can become Muslims, or you can become Sabaeans. But you better decide what it is you are, because when I come back, if you haven't decided what you are, then we're going to enslave you and, you know, and whatever." So off he rode with his army, and he was never seen again, actually. But the Haranians took this seriously, and they decided that they would find themselves a book, and they decided they'd be Sabaeans. Because in the Quran, it's about three times in there, Muhammad, peace be unto him, says that Sabaeans are exempt from forced conversion. They are to be treated like people of the book. Okay, what's a Sabaean? Well, the Queen of Sheba was a Sabaean, and that's, you know, little Yemen down there. Well, Yemen's a pretty dusty, arid place right now, and not a very nice place to live, I guess, but unless you're wealthy. But back about 250 years before Muhammad, they had a giant dam, which was one of the great wonders of the world, that watered the land of Saba, the land of the Queen of Sheba, and it was a paradise, and it was very highly advanced, and they had a very sophisticated civilization, and they were worshippers of the stars and the planets, and they had a religion very similar to the Canaanites, which is, of course, you know, the one that we use, Solomon used, and whatever. And so the Haranians, of course, knew about this, and they knew that. So they decided, we'll be Sabaeans. Now, of course, I got to explain that, well, the Sabaeans were, the Sabaeans, after the dam burst, it silted up and burst about 200 years before Muhammad. And gosh, Yemen started to go down at that point. And yet, Muhammad, peace be unto him, actually made Sabaeans exempt from forced conversion because he knew how important these people were, and he knew how well-educated they were, and how they were the best scholars. They and the Jews were the best scholars in Arabia. And so that's why he did that. Well, the Haranians were way up there, you know, 1,000 miles to the north or so, and they said, well, yeah, let's be Sabaeans, because that's closest to what we are. In fact, they're almost identical to what we are. Well, they took counsel, and they said, oh, well, good gosh, we got to have a book. And this guy's going to come back. He's going to say, well, where's your book? And we don't have any Sabaean books, and nobody can read their language anymore. And, you know, what are we going to do? So they said, well, okay, let's get a book. And what do you think they picked? They picked the Hermetic Corpus, the Flamander and the Asclepius. And they thought, well, that's great, but, okay, we got the Hermetic Corpus. No, that's good. But what if they don't like that? These people are biblical. This isn't that biblical. Okay, well, we'll get us a biblical book to go along with it. You know what they picked? The Book of Enoch. Oh, boy. So that's how the Book of Enoch got into the Hermetic tradition, was the Sabaeans, because the Sabaeans bought into the, well, they had, the Sabaeans had students over in Alexandria and all that. They knew what they were doing. So the emir never came back, but the Sabaeans, however, became hermetic. And because it fitted so well with what they were, with their religion, and they had the Book of Enoch incorporated into it too. And so that got into the hermetic tradition. Well, you may think this is kind of isolated, but really it isn't, because the Sabaean magic and the Sabaean astrology, Sabaean planetary worship and all of that was the core of an Arab grimoire, which is one of the foundations of Hermetic magic when it got translated into Spanish and it got translated into Latin. And the Sabaean invocations and prayers and magical system is the heart of the Picatrix. And the Picatrix is the great granddaddy of all the Hermetic grimoires. And so the Sabaeans made their thing in there. Now, of course, they invoke, like the Sufis, they invoke Jesus occasionally, and they include that tradition too. And essentially, that is the Arab contribution into this Hermetic tradition. And one thing I want to point out is this wasn't just a one-shot thing. In 1614, this is another important issue here, because Hermes, his teachings were so close to Christianity, and because they resonated so well, the Catholic Church in the 1400s on through the 1500s, all the way up to 1614, the Catholic Church really was fond of Hermes Trismegistus. They really were. They even had statues of Hermes Trismegistus in the courtyards of churches and one thing or another. And Ficino and Campanella and all of them, they were writing, and Pico della Mirandola, they were writing Hermetic books, and they were getting imprimaturs on them, and Hermes was the top. That was the quintessence of early Renaissance philosophy, okay? Well, that was based upon the idea that the Hermetic treatises represented ancient Egypt, even before Moses. Because, you know, they didn't have the Rosetta Stone. They didn't know what the old hieroglyphs meant. And they thought that this was really, really ancient Egyptian stuff before Moses and all that. Well, that was all really fine, and everything was going along great. But then a linguist, a philologist by the name of Isaac Casaubon, proved that the particular Hermetic treatises that they had were written after Jesus, a couple hundred years after Jesus, and not even before Jesus, and certainly not before Moses. And he proved it. And then the church just turned around and did a reversal. And you could no longer get an imprimatur on a Hermetic book. Now, they pulled the statues of Hermes and destroyed them, you know, and so Hermetic philosophy got downgraded. Now, but for a while there, it was going great. Now, turns out, actually, that the Hermetic treatises did predate Jesus, the originals, but they certainly didn't predate Moses, not by a long shot. So that was the brief shining hour of Hermetic philosophy in the early Renaissance. However, that was in Catholic Europe, but over in England, Hermetic philosophy still was venerated, and it still had its proponents. And of course, Abbot Trithemius and the mentor of Cornelius Agrippa, he was a Catholic abbot, and so the Hermetic philosophy still hung on, and Agrippa, of course, did his three books of occult philosophy and all that. That's Hermetic. Now, that Emerald Tablet, by the way, was kind of a separate thing. And there's a book out that I just got, just came out, called The Secret History of Hermestris Megistus by Florian Ebeling. She's a German lady. And this deals primarily with the alchemical tradition, which tends to derive primarily from this the Emerald Tablet, which is not really directly connected to the regular Hermetic corpus. It certainly is Hermetic, and that Emerald Tablet influenced German Hermetism and alchemy very, very much, and alchemy is very definitely a Hermetic art. And it's more Hermetic, actually, than the Kabbalah, which of course has been integrated into the Hermetic philosophy. Now, one of the things that we said here in our abstract said we performed early forms of Christianity that were more compatible with Hermetic doctrine. There was a very, very large denomination of Christianity in the early days of the Christian Church called Arian Christianity. Now, don't confuse that with A-Y-R-A-N. Don't confuse that with blue-eyed, blonde-haired, goose-stepping Arians or anything like that. This was A-R-I-A-N. Now, Arian Christianity, they quite frankly believed that Jesus was a man. And they didn't care about a virgin birth or anything like that. I mean, Jesus was a man, and he was a man who realized that he was also God, and that everybody else was too. He said that a lot of them didn't know it, and he was. And this is essentially the Hermetic view. And by the way, it's also the Kabbalistic view. If you read Leonora Leach's Secret Doctrine of the Kabbalah, she's the one who inherited the mantle of Ira Kaplan, by the way. You read her Secret Doctrine of the Kabbalah, and you realize that their concept, the Kabbalistic concept of the man who becomes God, is that he finds God within himself and he transforms himself. He purifies and transforms himself into God. This is more the Hermetic view. The Hermetic view is that we are all God. All of us have God within us. If we realize it, then we can become the center of the universe. And essentially, we can become all-powerful. Now, one thing you can see immediately that this can be a ferocious ego trip, and it has been abused, of course, but Hermes, over and over and over again, stresses piety. He stresses the charity, piety, and all of the moral virtues of Christianity and Judaism are very strongly stressed in Hermetic philosophy, because the Hermetic philosopher realizes that if he is in possession of consciousness, that means everybody else is too, whether they know it or not. It's like the Hindu expression, namaste. The God within me salutes the God within you. Now, of course, if you're one of these people who doesn't like people, and if you're one of these people who doesn't care about people, well, then you can take this and you can kind of think, well, I'm God and the rest of these people don't know it, and even if they do know it, I don't care, you know. That, so you can misuse it. You can certainly misuse it.
And that's one of the reasons why it is an elite proposition. And it's also the reason why the old rabbis with the Kabbalah, which, of course, you know, in its own way is hermetic, why they would not train someone in the Kabbalah unless that individual was 40 years old, had children, and was well established in the community. Then they would condescend to teach you Kabbalah. And for that reason, because they wanted to try to make sure that this awesome power that they were conferring was given to somebody who was essentially a good person, a person who had respect for everyone else and who practiced the golden rule and what have you. Hermetic philosophy in its original form is very much that way. It's very positive. And as I say, it's oriented toward the light. Now, this is one of the reasons why Hermetic Yoga, which of course is based on the middle pillar, Golden Dawn's middle pillar, we bring down the light. We bring down the light through the four worlds. And that is tremendously powerful in a very positive sort of way. Now, other forms of yoga, they bring the power up from the earth, and that's good too. Now, this Aryan Christian idea was more compatible with the Hermetic idea, because the Hermetic idea doesn't indicate... See, Hermes originally, if you read the Hermetic treatises, Hermes originally, he talks to, or the Gnolls, the spirit, the Holy Spirit commander, speaks to it. He doesn't become the one and only Son of God. Now, I have to explain that Christianity, I think most of you know this, Christianity really didn't get to be the way it is today before the Council of Nicaea. Emperor Constantine, who was a Mithraite, which is actually a hermetic form of hermetism. The cult of Mithra and hermetic philosophy are very, very similar. In fact, they're almost identical. But here again, this is an elite kind of a thing, and Constantine was a Mithraite, but he knew that Christianity would be better as a state religion than Mithraism, which was popular in the army, but I mean it wasn't something that would be good for the people necessarily. So he told the bishops at the Council of Nicaea, he said, you better deify this crucified savior of yours. You better deify him, because if you don't deify him, you're not going to become the state religion. And in fact, he just ordered them to do that. So the Aryan Christians got thrown out. and in fact, of course, Paul Clark, who has researched this a lot more than I have, Paul said that at one point, when some Roman soldier grabbed one of these bishops and slammed him up against the wall and punched him out for, you know, daring to challenge the idea of deifying Christ. So the Council of Nicaea brought about the idea that Jesus was the one and only Son of God and identical with God and nobody else was and whatever. And that, of course, was quite frankly not what Jesus was teaching. And that aspect of it. So you can venerate Jesus and love Jesus and you really should. If you're raised a Christian, you should keep Jesus. Have a nice place for Jesus in your heart, because Jesus was really a wonderful. Wonderful philosopher, and very compatible with Hermetic philosophy. Now, so I hope that answers the question of our listener. wanted to know, where does Jesus fit into all of this? Well, he fits in the Rosicrucian tradition, definitely. In fact, in the Golden Dawn, in one of the higher grades, they actually strap you to a cross, and you're hanging on the cross of obligation. So, the Rosicrucian tradition, very definitely, and that certainly is Hermetic. I'm looking over the abstract here. I think we've covered just about everything we said we were going to cover in this discussion. So you know that Hermetic philosophy incorporates a lot of astrology, alchemy, just about all of the good aspects of the Western mystery schools are preserved and incorporated in the Hermetic tradition, which is very much alive. We're having a Hermetic revival now these days, and a lot of scholars are taking it very seriously, and it's a lot more respect for Hermetic philosophy than there was. Now, I want to recommend a book. Those of you who really want to savor Hermetic philosophy, in the most beautiful translation I have ever read, I read a lot of them. This is a little book published by Inner Traditions, and it's called The Way of Hermes. It's new translations of the Corpus Hermeticum and the definitions of Hermes Trismegistus to Asclepius. It's translated by Clement Salomon, Doreen Van Oven, William D. Wharton, and Jean-Pierre Mahy. Now, this little book is so delightful that I just can't recommend it highly enough. It will really give you the essence of Hermetic philosophy in a translation that is not difficult to read at all. Just let me read you a little bit right here. See where we're getting pretty close to closing time here, but. Thus, a man starts to rise up through the harmony of the cosmos. To the first plane, he surrenders the activity of growth and diminution. The second, the means of evil, trickery now being inactive. To the third, covetous deceit now inactive. And to the fourth, the eminence pertaining to a ruler being now without avarice. And the fifth, impious, daring, and reckless audacity. Of course, that's Mars. And to the sixth, evil impulses for wealth, that's Jupiter, and all of these being now inactive, and to the seventh plane, the falsehood, which waits in ambush, and that's Saturn, and that is the ascent of the soul up through the spheres in the Hermetic philosophy. Now, next week, we are going to have a show on chaos magic. Oh, boy. And we're going to have a special guest, Andre Vidimus, who is one of the most prominent authors of books on chaos magic. And so Andre will be on the show, and we will deal with chaos magic. And, of course, that's an outgrowth of Crowley and Austin Spare and Kenneth Grant and Peter Carroll and Andre Vidimus is carrying on that tradition. And so we will discuss chaos magic next week and want you all here, and we will do it again. So meanwhile, good magic.